Hey, Richies. This year, Even the Rich turns 3, and we want you to celebrate with us. So between now and the end of March, you can send a personal message to Arisha and me that might be selected to play at the end of an episode.
Yeah, it can be a shout out about one of your favorite ETR moments, or you can just tell us how much you love us.
If you're in the U.S., use any Alexa device or the Alexa app and say, "Alexa, send a voice comment." Be sure to tell us your name and city, then listen to see if yours makes it onto the show.
Check out some of our favorites so far at the end of today's episode. We can't wait to hear from you.
From Wondery, I'm Brooke Ziffrin.
And I'm Arisha Skidmore-Williams.
And this is Even the Rich. Over the last two episodes, we've followed the trials, tribulations, and triumphs of two women who overcame the odds and married into the royal family, Wallis Simpson and the queen consort, Camilla.
Hang on, does it still count as marrying into the royal family if your husband abdicates his royal position to be with you? Asking for Meghan Markle.
I mean, technically they're still the Duke and Duchess, but if the British public has any say, it won't be long before they're commoners just like the rest of us losers.
Well, welcome to the club, McGarry. And here to talk all things PR and royal, we have Tennille Clark joining us today. So Tennille's a publicist from Trinidad and Tobago, a former colony, so she knows all about ditching the royal family.
She definitely does. She posted this brilliant thread on Twitter that analyzed all the subtle shade thrown at the crown in the statements released by Commonwealth countries in the days after the Queen's passing.
Yeah, I will always be here for people who do the behind-the-scenes math of Twitter, so I don't have to.
Same.
And God, this woman can do the math. She's like this PR wizard who can read between the lines.
Yeah, she definitely can. In fact, before anyone knew for sure the queen was dying, she noticed all the discreet goings-on of the royal family and predicted they were going to announce her death down to when in the day they would do it.
Yeah, Tennille knows what's up. So today she's going to take us behind the PR curtain and break down how she does what she does, the changing relationship of the Commonwealth to the crown, and why the royal family seems so out of touch. Plus, she's going to give us her assessment of Meghan and Harry's current media blitz.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank?
Literally always.
Okay, well, the new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look, and it comes in luxe gold packaging. It feels incredibly high-end, but it is a lot more affordable.
Oh yeah, the Panorama Mascara lives up to its name by giving your lashes panoramic volume and a fully fanned-out look. Its tapered mascara wand catches every single lash, including those hard-to-reach corner lashes. When I do wear makeup, I do the bare minimum, and that's usually eyeliner and mascara and lip gloss.
Yeah.
And so mascara has to really pop.
Yes.
And let me tell you, L'Oreal, this baby pops.
Yeah. I do love the packaging. Like, I'm all about that.
So if you're looking for an affordable mascara that gives you voluminous, lengthened lashes, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. This episode is brought to you by Saks.com.
We know you have your tried and true closet staples, but it can be fun to switch it up. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada.
Yeah, it's easy to find instant inspiration at Saks.com. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch.
Okay, well, obviously this is making me just want to shop after we record this.
I know, and it doesn't take much for me wanting to shop.
No.
So. But if you're looking for a joyful shopping escape, which we all are,
yes,
then head to Saks.com for inspiring ways to shop for everything on your agenda.
Saks.com. Hi, Tennille. Thank you so much for joining us on Even the Rich. How are you today?
I am great. Thank you so much. Happy to be here all the way from the Republic of Trinidad and Tobago.
I wish this had been done in person, but
yeah, we should have gone there.
Definitely need to visit in the near future, please.
Yeah. So we have a lot to get into today. We actually just wrapped a couple of story arcs from the royal family's relatively recent past. We did the story of would be Queen Wallis Simpson and the story of the current queen consort, King Charles's wife, Camilla. So I want to start by asking you about the passing of Queen Elizabeth II. You actually predicted her death in September of 2022, and You posted a thread on Twitter decoding everything you were seeing the royal family do. And before we even knew for sure that she was dying, you actually nailed down when in the day the royal family would announce the queen's death. So just take us back to that day. What was the first thing you noticed? And kind of just walk us through the signs you saw and what your, you know, spidey PR senses were telling you.
Well, it was a quiet September 8th of 2022. No, I'm just kidding. So it was, you know, it was a normal September morning. So I hopped on Twitter and I saw some commotion happening with regards to the increasingly failing health of the Queen. And I knew instantly that it was a setup for the worst to be announced at some point in time. I actually decided from that moment that I would just take the day off and I would spend it online on Twitter, just media monitoring. I mean, this is a massive global popular culture conversation that is happening and something that we would probably likely never witness in our lifetimes again. My spidey senses just started tingling. The Daily Mail sent out a tweet saying that Charles and Camilla and William head to Queen's bedside in Balmoral. Someone sent me a screenshot of a notification from their telephone saying that the Duke and the Duchess of Sussex will be traveling to Scotland. Then I said that people can expect an official press statement on the royal letterhead to be issued by 6 p.m. their time, and to bear in mind that the family is gathering at the moment. And then the announcement was finally made. This happened around, I believe that it was around 1:35 p.m. Trinidad and Tobago time, which is about 5:35 p.m. London time. So it was just before the 6 p.m. hour. I saw the tweet from Poppy saying Queen Elizabeth II has died at the age of 96. And I said, time for the muse flood. And buckle up, PR kids, we're about to witness something that we will probably never see again in our lifetime.
I'm curious, how did you put together those pieces in that scenario? Like, can you take us behind the scenes of being an expert publicist and making sense of all of this in real time?
I think the starting point for those kind of in the minute decisions or perceptions or suspicions of what would be announced next, it really started with the rushing to the bedside, because that sense of familiarity and familial realm about her being surrounded by family, the entire tonality of the experience has to be quiet. There has to be a sense of reverence around what we now know eventually happened, which is her passing. So there had to be a tone set of reverence, of dignity. And you have to start that with family, because that is what the crown is built on. So when I said to myself, to be honest, and I said to the Twitter world, to be honest, I won't be surprised if the family members are on their way there to Balmoral, and that the press had not started to report it as yet. Within a few minutes, I saw an article from the Daily Mail saying Charles and Camilla and William are heading to the Queen's bedside in Balmoral. That was literally 7 minutes after I tweeted. So that tone of family, because there had been such a fracturing in the public domain of the family interest, of the family brand values, given everything that had happened over the last couple of years, that they really needed to centralize family dignity in that story first. Because that was what she was above everything else. She was a matriarch. And she was a matriarch in multiple senses. She was a matriarch to her family, but she's also a matriarch to the extended family, which is her public. And she's also the matriarch of the Commonwealth as well. So that trilogy is something that had to be acknowledged to unite all spaces and places in this significant life event.
Right. So speaking of all of your brilliant Twitter threads, you had another that day where you broke down statements from leaders around the world, especially in the Caribbean, about the Queen's passing. So you picked up on a lot of subtext.
The Commonwealth brand has been under some obvious pressure. And as a matter of fact, the last royal visit that was undertaken by Prince William and Kate, it was not a success at all.
No. Nope.
As a matter of fact, it was an unmitigated disaster. It was a scathing, really, indictment on the status of how the Commonwealth is receiving the idea and the ideology of royalty. It was real bad. In Trini terms, it was real bad.
Can you just tell us some of the specific things that made that tour such a disaster?
Oh, Jamaica was lit.
Love to hear it.
Jamaica was lit. There were a lot of protests happening in Kingston when they landed. Of course, they would have been met with a level of nobleness by government entities, by government officials and things of that nature. But Jamaica is also the land of the Maroons. And if you know anything about slavery and the transatlantic slave trade outside of Haiti, the history of the Maroons and they as a community that have been able to protect their interests to a great degree. And to this day, there's still a very sizable Maroon community with their own leader, and they don't even answer to Jamaican laws as they currently exist in the Jamaican constitution. They have their community and they respect themselves above everything else. So they came out in their numbers. But even for the people that are not a part of the Maroon community, they voiced their displeasure at these representatives of an institution that has brought great harm. It's the existence of the crown for many persons represents an ideology of harming people. And I think people need to understand that the slavery period for many of us is the greatest human rights violation that any of us have ever seen in history or ever read about in history. And we know our history. Because Caribbean history doesn't skim the surface. We deep dive into history, the transatlantic slave trade. It's a part of our education system, which I think is a significant departure from the British education system, even though we follow the British education system. We deep dive into it. So when I look at this situation with the pushback on the critical race theory being taught in U.S. schools or not being taught in U.S. schools versus us in the Caribbean saying, yo, this is what happened. Y'all need to know about this. Do with that information what you will. And people did what they wanted to with the information and they showed up in protest. But protest is also, it's not even a byproduct. Protest is a very spiritual, economic, sociocultural kind of aspect of the Caribbean way of life, because that is something that was handed down to us in tradition through the transatlantic slave trade. In terms of the Bahamians, they were not happy, and again, Commonwealth versus common good. The Bahamas had been hit really, really hard by a hurricane experience as well. And when they sought that support, it wasn't there for them. The crown or this institution that is supposed to unite through common good and shared values didn't show up. They didn't show up where they needed to be. And there is a level of resentment, but it's also a very hot reminder for a lot of people. And it really brought into full focus the question of why are they here? What is the suitability of having them as our head of state? People showed up in resistance to what the crown represents. And it was not just in Jamaica. It happened in the Bahamas as well. As a matter of fact, when William and Kate went to the Bahamas, they were told in a meeting that Bahamas was beginning their process to leave the Commonwealth. That's when they found out.
Well, if you're wondering, wait, what exactly is the Commonwealth? Fear not, because up next, Tenille is going to break it down for us.
So as a listener of Even the Rich, you know that audio piques the imagination, which is why we're so excited for Audible's new collection of exclusive thrillers. They feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances that really bring the story to life.
Oh, yeah. The next listen on my list is the psychological thriller, The Silent Patient.
Ooh.
So it's all about a therapist who tries to unravel the mystery of a woman who refuses to talk or give any explanation as to why she shot her husband. I mean, it's going to be the perfect binge listen. And you know I love my thrillers.
I can agree. And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog.
Yeah, new members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/eventherich or text eventherich to 500-500.
That's audible.com/eventherich or text eventherich to 500-500 to get started. When you find new ways to save, you can reach your financial goals more easily and still have the occasional treat.
Exactly. And Chime's here to help you do that. With a Chime checking account, you can make financial progress with features like fee-free overdraft up to $200 with SpotMe or getting paid up to 2 days early with direct deposit.
Yep. So if you set up direct deposit into your Chime account and use an activated debit card, Chime will spot you up to your limit when you exceed your balance.
And I love that Chime never charges fees or interest for using SpotMe. To date, Chime has spotted members over $20 billion.
My God. Take more control of your finances and say goodbye to monthly fees. Open your account in minutes at chime.com/rich. That's chime.com/rich.
Chime feels like progress.
Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Boosts are available to eligible Chime members enrolled in SpotMe and are subject to monthly limits. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.
So in the United States, where Brooke and I live, the Commonwealth doesn't come up in our day-to-day conversations. It's kind of one of those words where we hear it, but I don't know that many people fully understand what it means. Now, for the Queen, being the head of the Commonwealth is her life's work. And Tenille, you grew up in Trinidad and Tobago, which is a former Commonwealth country. So for those of us who need a little refresher, what is the Commonwealth and what does it mean to be a Commonwealth country?
So the Commonwealth is essentially, and I will try to explain it in the most layman terms possible. Those are the countries that were once united under the crown to express mutual interests of diplomacy, economic ties, and social interests. And in Trinidad and Tobago, we are now a republic. We've been a republic since 1976. So the Queen is no longer our head of state, but islands such as Jamaica and Antigua, just to name a few, they're still under the Commonwealth. The Barbados was under the Commonwealth up till, I believe, 2021. And in November 2021, they actually received their republic status. They sought their republic status and they had their ceremony and now they're a republic. And actually, Prince Charles at the time, he actually came to the ceremony to give a few remarks and things of that nature and to give his blessings and, you know, wishing Barbados the best.
So in Great Britain, not everyone is a royalist, of course, but the royal family, I think, generally has a very high approval rating. And we talked a little bit about this when, you know, Prince William and Kate went on their little tour, the unmitigated disaster, as we call it. So would you say that represents the general public sentiment towards the royal family in the Caribbean now?
So when you look at countries like India, Australia, I think that there's a marked difference in the way that the British public sees this indispensable role and responsibility that the crown has. When Antigua and Barbuda, when Barbuda was ravaged during our hurricane season, our regional hurricane season a few years ago. And they sought some kind of support from the Crown. It wasn't the support that the people were expecting. So there was a level of disenfranchisement that the general public here has been dealing with for some time. And I think that it is symptomatic of something bigger as opposed to it being the root cause. And that seems to be a challenge that the Crown continues to face. Mm-hmm. How do we address, or do we want to address what the root cause is as opposed to out in the fires of the symptoms? I think people don't feel connected to the idea and the ideology of the Crown as much as they used to, which is causing. And when you have that shaking confidence, that means that you're having a internal crisis as to the value systems. How do you get people on board with your value systems if you aren't involved in their daily lived experiences? And I remember watching an episode of The Crown on Netflix where, you know, there was a remark that was made. I believe it would have been by the character playing the Queen, that the Commonwealth is such an important part to the ecosystem of the royal family and to royal duties, because it unites a group of people under one marked mission and vision. And when you have a departure from that, that means that you have a departure of thought leadership. You have differences of opinion as to the role, function, sustainability, and value of the Crown. And that in itself can pose to be problematic for the firm as it relates to them ensuring that their defenses on their usefulness in the social fabric continues to tether on.
Tennille, earlier you mentioned watching some of The Crown, the Netflix show, and we actually have a clip here to listen. It's dramatizing the actual speech that Queen Elizabeth gave on her 21st birthday in 1947.
Oh, I remember that, but I would love to hear it again.
If we all go forward together with an unwavering faith, a high courage, and a quiet heart, we shall be able to make of this ancient Commonwealth, which we all love so dearly, an even grander thing. More free, more prosperous, more happy, and a more powerful influence for good in the world than it has been in the greatest days of our forefathers.
Okay, so Tennille, from listening to that, how has the royal family's messaging about the Commonwealth changed since then, and how has it stayed the same?
I think it's very much stayed the same, and I think that has been a point of contention for royalists that dearly love the institution as it exists, because it begs the question, where is the adaptability of the Crown to changing times? And that is a theme that we've seen recurring in The Crown. That is also a theme that we've seen in Harry and Meghan's Netflix documentary as well. Where is, and Harry actually made mention of it, where is the adaptability to The Crown? So three key things that I noted from that speech. She mentioned about love so dearly. And remember early on in our conversation, I mentioned the theme of love, love of family, love of responsibility, love of duty. So I found it very interesting that she mentioned that. The other thing that she mentioned is about being more prosperous.
Yeah.
But girl, prosperous for who?
Yep.
Because if the Commonwealth doesn't feel the connection to that prosperity, then there is going to be a challenge or questions for members of the Commonwealth as it relates to leadership and what it means to be led by an institution that is supposed to be looking out for our prosperity, which I know is a routine conversation that happens in Commonwealth circles. And the last thing that she mentioned is about being a powerful influence for good, who does that good serve? And I think that that is a conversation that also continues to happen as well. Now, the Commonwealth, because we have embassies throughout the Caribbean region that take a very marked and specific kind of involvement as it relates to improving the lives and livelihoods of people throughout the Caribbean region, because this is where I live, but particularly for the youth. I have seen a lot of support go towards education and those kinds of proponents of support. So that can't be discounted, that the British royal family, and by extension, the ideology of the Commonwealth, has served some merit of good as it relates to supporting the youth and pushing for youth development. But when you're speaking about a powerful influence for good, should that not go in hand with also acknowledging the powerful influence for what was not good that has happened? Where is that acknowledgement of how the transatlantic slave trade process and experience has ultimately for generation changed the trajectory, stunted the growth, and hindered the progress for the diaspora as a whole, you know? So those are the things really that speech was very significant for her 21st birthday. It's something that is burned into my memory from watching The Crown. And it's significant for a lot of reasons. And I think those are three of the very salient reasons that people continue to think about when they watch that specific episode.
In the new Netflix series, Harry and Meghan, Harry actually makes a comment about how the royal family missed out on a huge public relations opportunity by not having Meghan to garner support in the Caribbean. Do you agree with him? How might that tour have been different from a PR standpoint if it had been Harry and Meghan who had gone?
I think it would have gone much better, to be perfectly honest. And I think that a lot of people, I think whether you agree with the idea of the Crown and the royal family, if it should be in existence, if it should even be relevant or not, the reality of the situation is that they are, Harry is very much loved in the Caribbean, just as his mother. We have a running joke in the Caribbean where we say to ourselves, you see pictures of vacations, you see pictures of your family, and then you might see a picture of Diana hanging up very randomly in someone's home. She was that important to how she colored the worldview of the lens that the Crown was seen through. And Harry is an extension of that as her offspring. His mannerisms, the level of delicateness and thoughtfulness that he uses and the way that he is now positioned himself, the way that he has been very adamant on protecting his family. Diana was the same thing with her children. And when you think about those connections and you think about the way how he is generally and genuinely well received, then you see that there could have been a different outcome had it been them. But it also begs the question as well about, I remember there was a certain part in Harry and Meghan's documentary where Meghan was speaking about when she got her first agent and she was speaking about how auditioning had, as an actress, had become so hard because of her biracial background, and she got a lot of no's. And there was a question that she superimposed onto herself about fitting into a box. And I found that to be very insightful because there's a duality there, because it made me wonder, are we still talking about her career or are we talking about her role in the ecosystem of the royal family? I think that whiteness was not, even for Harry, whiteness was not enough to protect the security of Meghan's blackness. And I really hope that people understand. Harry is not to be completely absolved because of his lived experiences,
but his lived experiences are of value.
After the break, we're going to take a deep dive with Tennille Clark into all things Harry and Meghan.
We all face stress in our daily lives. What if the answer to a better stress response is in one key nutrient? I'm talking about magnesium, and specifically Magnesium Breakthrough by Bioptimizers. This one-of-a-kind product is designed to reverse low levels of magnesium, which could have a positive effect on our stress response. But don't take my word for it. Here's a quote from a 2020 issue of the scientific journal Nutrients. Results suggest that stress could increase magnesium loss, causing a deficiency. And in turn, magnesium deficiency could enhance the body's susceptibility to stress, resulting in a magnesium and stress vicious circle. I only recommend Magnesium Breakthrough by Bioptimizers. It's the only organic full-spectrum magnesium supplement that includes 7 unique forms of magnesium for stress resilience and better sleep. Simply go to bioptimizers.com/ifstories. Promo code IFSTORIES10 to get your magnesium breakthrough and find out this month's gift with purchase. That's bioptimizers.com/IFSTORIES, promo code IFSTORIES10.
Life is busier than ever. It might be harder to find time these days to grocery shop, prep, and cook healthy and hearty meals. I get it. But Factor's got you covered.
Yeah, so Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, delivered right to your door, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes.
Exactly. And Factor is tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. If you're traveling or still finishing up last week's meals, you can always pause or reschedule deliveries.
I mean, I know I've talked before about how much I love Factor because it's just so easy.
And it doesn't taste like, you know, the microwavable yes. meals you see, especially in rom-coms when we're trying to heighten and highlight how sad and pathetic this woman's life is.
Yeah.
They don't taste like that. They taste so good as if you made them yourself or hired a chef. Head to factormeals.com/rich50 and use code rich50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box. That's code rich50 at factormeals.com/rich50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
So, Tennille, you know, Meghan and Harry have been creating their own PR moment in a really big way. There's, of course, Harry's new book, Spare, their Netflix docuseries. Now, we've got a few clips from their docuseries and in a new segment that we just made up called Ask a Publicist. We want to get your take on some of the things that they're bringing to light and their PR strategy because, you know, honestly, nowadays, everything is a PR move, right?
Apparently.
You're like, yeah, that's how I keep the lights on. So here's the first clip. This is James Holt speaking, a former Palace spokesman and the current executive director of Meghan and Harry's foundation. And he's talking about when the tide turned against Meghan.
When some people in the institution around the family started to see that this new couple could destabilize the power dynamics, whether actively talked about or not, the aim was to put them in a box or make them irrelevant.
I do think to a great degree it is true, because when you look at the first, for me, the first thing that comes to mind is the ideology of duty versus individuality. Meghan, as a standalone person that owns her personhood, is a celebrity in her own right. How do you put a Black, successful, female actress into a box? And in order to break that down and to silence that treaty of her personhood, that's a lot of work to have to break that person down so that duty wins and individuality. There's no room. I remember that also being said in The Crown, that there's no room for individuality working in the firm. You know what I mean? So that's the first thing. The next thing with regards to love versus loyalty, the silencing of that means the silencing of the love that Harry and Meghan would essentially be sharing between each other, because we see the story of how they met. Well, thanks to the to this new docuseries, we see the story, or their version of their truth, rather, of how their love blossomed. How is that packaged to be palatable under the microscope of what the firm normally represents? And then the last thing that I think is really, really important when you talk about putting somebody in a box against the backdrop of the idea of feminism and leadership, which Meghan takes on so comfortably. She's been a spokesperson for the United Nations and other charities. She's repeatedly said that one of the reasons why she fell in love with Harry is because of his philanthropic work. And that idea, and he has said the same thing about her leadership in taking charge and in presenting policies that help people and make people better. How do you then silence that?
Okay, we got another one for you. This one is Harry talking about the royal family's communications team. So there's an office for each person or couple, more or less. Just a note, they call the royal person they work for their principal.
It's a dirty game. You know, there's leaking, but there's also planting of stories. So if the comms team want to be able to remove a negative story about their principal, they will trade and give you something about someone else's principal. So the offices end up working against each other. It's a kind of this weird understanding or acceptance that happens.
So, Tennille, as a publicist, A, did that nugget of information surprise you? And B, what do you think about it? Like, does it make you look down on the family's whole PR department? Or do you think that kind of cutthroatery is just par for the course?
So you asked me first if it surprised me. It doesn't. Because when you're talking about negotiating values and negotiating realities, and you understand that one person was literally created to lead and one was created to support, there's a reason why Harry's new book is called Spare, right? So when you think about negotiating value, there's only one interest, one common interest that can come out on top, and that is the seat of the crown and who occupies that seat. So in the idea of negotiating those realities and negotiating values comes with the territory, sadly or unfortunately, as it relates to how the different principles work. And the idea of who is most valuable in that totem pole is a conversation that I'm sure is constantly reminded, because everybody wants to protect their respective interests or their respective principals' interests. But can that really happen when there is ultimately that one thing that needs to be protected? So that's the first thing. The second thing, when you're speaking about negotiating value and looking at the rules of transition, and even just looking at the way that they would have handled a history-defining moment of crisis proportions, because the Queen's death was a crisis. Let's not be mistaken where that is concerned. Again, it's about what is the one thing that needs to be protected at all times. I go back again to the Crown Netflix series. Do you remember when the Queen's father passed away and her grandmother wrote her a letter and told her, I'm paraphrasing, but she basically told her, no matter what, it's the crown that has to be protected. So when it comes to duty versus individuality, there's none of that, because duty is tied into the crown. When it comes to love versus loyalty, there's nobody saying that love does not exist. But loyalty reigns supreme and leadership reigns supreme as well. So in speaking about negotiating realities, it's a value system that they have internally that none of us are really privy to, but we understand based on the conversations that are being had in the public domain, what are the superseding values that have to be protected for the Crown to survive? And I think that is a really, really salient point. What do people within the firm need to do to ensure the survival of the firm as we know it?
Mm-hmm. Okay, here's another clip that, you know, we thought was kind of interesting. Meghan hits back at the press for the headlines they published after the baby shower that her celebrity friends threw for her.
Some reports criticized the extravagance.
Ostentation.
Some of the world's biggest stars.
A show-off moment.
Traveling home in style.
Clooney's private jet, not too shabby.
It was so wrong. These independent, strong, successful women choose to use their own money, and it's not taxpayer money, to throw a party for their friend from a place of love. Why are you taking such a beautiful moment and trying to ruin it?
So, Tennille, just from a publicist's point of view, what do you think about what Meghan chose to say and not say about what happened?
I think what she would have expressed would have been coming from a place and space of hurt, but not hurt for her. It's hurt for her children. That's not something that anybody would want to see perpetuated or superimposed onto her children in any form or fashion. And the idea that there was such outrage in the press as it relates to, you know, the lavish nature of the baby shower, there's a hidden or latent conversation that is hiding under the surface there as it relates to Blackness and wealth. Because who is this person to have the audacity to be Black and rich and to have her own when the Crown is supposed to represent the pinnacle of everything that is good and symbolic and prosperous, as the Queen mentioned in her 21st birthday speech.
Tennille, this has been truly enlightening. Thank you so much for joining us here in Even the Rich.
No problem. I am very happy to come back whenever you guys need. We have a bit of bubbly and we chit-chat and talk about the PR situation of the
year. Yeah, I love
so,
it.
And
I'm so happy.
We can come to you, of course.
No, of course. We can do it on one of our many lovely beaches.
Perfect.
Yes.
Hey, Richies, we've loved hearing from you so far. Check out some of our favorite comments this week.
And if you're in the U.S. and want to send us your comment for the show, just use any Alexa device or the Alexa app and say, Alexa, send a voice comment.
We can't wait to hear from you.
Hey, Brooke and Arisha. My name's Aiden. I'm from Charlotte, North Carolina. I've been listening to Even the Rich since the first season about the royal family. I love this show. I've been listening for 3 years, and my favorite season was the House of Gucci season. I also thoroughly enjoyed the Whitney Houston season. I just love y'all's show, and I've been listening to it for forever. So happy you're turning 3. Love you both. Congratulations. Bye.
Hey, Richies. I'm Shook from Seattle. I love your show and I really enjoy your storytelling. You guys are awesome in the way that you tell the stories of these celebrities, both humanize them and also make it really funny for us to follow them along. Thank you for doing the great work, Brooke and Alicia. Looking forward to your 3-year anniversary episode. Cheers. Bye.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Even the Rich ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today, or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. I'm Brooke Ziffrin.
And I'm Arisha Skidmore-Williams. This episode was produced by Haley Gray. Our interview producer is Peter Arcuni. Our audio engineer is Sergio Enriquez. Desi Blaylock is our production coordinator. Our managing producer is Matt Gant. Our senior managing producer is Tanja Thigpen. Kate Young and Rachel Engelman are our series producers. Our executive producers are Stephanie Jens, Jenny Lauer-Beckman, and Marshall Louie for Wondery.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.